This is Leadership Part 4, Thinking Critically About Leadership, the Physics, and Vector Theory. So in this next series of episodes, I'm going to bring you into my mind and I'm going to show you how a person like me, mentally ill, cognitive disabilities like autism, being bipolar, with very few friends and practically no empathy, can be a successful leader, even though I'm not emotionally intelligent or outgoing or any of that. So we're going to recap the physics of leadership, which are the forces in the human condition that all successful leaders, leadership tactics, and leadership strategies, intentionally or not, must rely to succeed. And when you start thinking about leadership and if you want to become a better leader, or if someone tries to sell you a leadership course or a book on leadership, this will give you a framework to assess whether a leadership strategy or philosophy will be effective or not. And here's a radical claim that I'll make right now. The reason that the physics of leadership and vector theory are sound is that they are true for every person in every industry and every field of endeavor, for a group of any size, composition, diversity, or lack thereof, even your family. You will be able to look across every experience you ever had and see the physics of leadership governing every situation, because it is the human condition. So what that means is when you read an article that says the 10 things you can do about this or that, you can say, how does that observe the physics of leadership or not? And if it does, if it reflects the three laws of the physics of leadership, then you can be certain it's a solid leadership tactic. If it doesn't, then you have very good cause to be skeptical, or at least be sensitive to the fact that the person who gave you the advice was in a different situation that may or may not apply to you. Maybe they were rich and powerful. Maybe they were a football coach and everybody did what they said because they wanted to keep their jobs and run under contract, or maybe they were senior military leaders whose orders were carried the force of law. Anyway, this discussion will assist you in making your own assessment about whether or not whose advice will or won't work best for you in your particular circumstances. The physics of leadership can help you derive the right leadership solution in any given situation. That will become obvious, but it is also applicable to help you critically think about the leadership advice anybody ever gives you. The physics of leadership is a universal truth that unbreakable natural laws exist in our universe. Our reality is completely governed by the immutable natural laws of applied physics, like the law of gravity or the law of conservation of mass energy. The constant order embedded into our universe, which humanity has recognized after centuries of observation, are the only things that keep us from flying off the face of the earth into space, explains why the sun comes up. And we take all these things for granted. If the natural laws of applied physics didn't exist, then reality as we know it wouldn't exist. We wouldn't exist. The natural laws of applied physics govern our existence, whether or not we understand them, whether or not we agree, or whether or not we can do the math. They just are. And there's also a physics to leadership germane to the human condition. It arguably governs behavior of all carbon-based life forms. It exists whether or not we realize it, understand it, or accept it. It simply is. There is a physics to leadership. And when we think critically, we begin with know thyself. What do we know and what do we not know? At the first level, the binary analysis looks like this. There is either a physics to leadership that governs leadership outcomes, or there must be none. You can't have it both ways. There either is order in the universe and a physics to leadership, which means we can predict and calculate and expect certain leadership results, or there must be none, and no order and no physics to leadership, and our leadership outcomes would then necessarily only be random. And we know there are good leaders who get predictable, repeatable, good leadership results. So we know there must be a physics to leadership, and that is a fact. And so, in fact, anyone and everyone in the field of leadership, every coach, every instructor, and any and everyone selling their leadership expertise must admit the existence of leadership physics, because there must be some kind of physics, some kind of order embedded into the way that human beings interact, upon which that person's advice, if followed, will trigger the outcome that the person seeks. But here's the thing, it's only leadership physics if it applies universally, undeniably, perfectly, in every scenario, in every location, every time period, to every human being, over an infinite spectrum of leadership situations, over a lifetime of leadership choices. And that is a fact. And if anyone can ever find a single scenario where the physics of leadership doesn't apply, then either they're wrong, or they don't have all the information, or didn't understand the situation, or the physics of leadership is wrong. It's an inescapable logical fact. And that is a bold statement, but it's true. If it's the physics to leadership, it has to be right and applicable all the time, every time. No exception. exceptions. And it does. Just think of the craziest behavior you've ever seen by some manager or leader in the past. That guy who blamed everybody else for their problems, which got them in even more trouble, who blamed the guy who came before him, made stupid remarks, and then always doubled down on them even though they were stupid, and would refuse a great idea or even reject common sense, even if everybody knew it was common sense, just because it wasn't his idea. Even though it's crazy to lead like that, in order to be the physics of leadership would have to be able to account for even that kind of crazy individual, right? Well, guess what? It does. It's easy. It's a perfect example of someone who, number one, is more interested in preserving their ego and being right than doing well for their business or their country, and number three, makes them feel even better about themselves if they behave in that way because they can keep believing that they're always right, smarter than everybody else, and fire or belittle anyone whose presence challenges that leader's self-interest and feelings. The physics of leadership perfectly models this. And from the physics of leadership and nothing else, we can derive the tactic necessary to control this type of person. It immediately reveals itself, right? It's easy. If you want a leader like that to do something, you can't just tell them to do it. You have to deliver the concept to them subtly, maybe in private or in email. Something that gives away enough of the answer in a way that they can think or say they thought of it. Make them think it's their idea. And subtly throw them some recognition periodically. Just a little. Just enough to make them like it and leave them hungry for more. But they're just as easy to lead as anybody else if you develop your situational leadership tactics with the physics of leadership in mind. When I went into the military, I'll never forget what my dad told me. He said, "You'll be amazed at what you can accomplish if you don't worry about who gets the credit." And that little piece of advice proved itself true over and over and over. And the only people who will disagree are those people who hear this and whose interest in receiving credit or having things be fair, or who think it's not right for people like that to take credit for their ideas and the way it makes them feel good when they receive credit, or it makes them feel bad when things aren't fair when somebody else takes the credit for the ideas. Those are the people who will say, "No, I don't believe in that," because the physics of leadership predicts that's the way they'll react. So it models everything. The physics of leadership is the human condition. So if effective leaders and effective leadership exists anywhere, then the physics of leadership must exist everywhere. So I'm going to go over the laws of the physics of leadership really quick right here, but if you want more, then go check out Leadership Part 1, The Physics of Leadership, and it'll give you a little bit more detail on what the physics of leadership is. So the three laws of the physics of leadership are these. Number one, everyone subjectively wants the best for themselves. Number two, our leadership transacts only in the individual minds of others and nowhere else. And number three, the impact of our leadership is going to be determined by the way we make other people feel. And the physics of leadership holds true for every person, every organization of every size, and every field of endeavor. The physics of leadership governs every outcome of an infinite diversity of leadership situations over a lifetime of leadership choices. We manage things, processes, and resources. We lead only people. Leadership physics is the leadership theory of everything. Now let's talk about leadership vector theory. Like the natural laws of the universe and applied physics, the laws of the physics of leadership are immutable and stand alone. However, the natural laws of the universe by themselves won't calculate the escape velocity or tell us what the control signals and landing algorithms are we need to launch, re-enter, and self-land a SpaceX rocket. To make those calculations necessary to achieve these feats of technology, we develop mathematical equations and models based on the natural laws of the universe. The nature of the physics of leadership is no different. To calculate leadership outcomes and make effective leadership choices, we must apply a leadership model akin to scientific equations derived from the physics of leadership. Leadership outcomes can be calculated with the same precision as technological outcomes using an effective leadership model based on the physics of leadership. Just like our calculations in physics, the precision of our predictions and the accuracy of our calculations is depending entirely on the precision and accuracy of our measurements and inputs. Garbage in, garbage out. And one such leadership model derived entirely from the physics of leadership is leadership vector theory. Think of a vector is an arrow of your energy pointing from your spirit in a direction of your choice with an intensity of your choice. You can think of your vectors as interests, hopes, wants, needs, and goals. Everybody has them. Although some vectors can be of an involuntary nature vis-a-vis interest, intensity, and direction too. But we're just going to call all those vectors vectors of self. And they can be many in number and unique in character, direction, and intensity, specific to the individual minds of every person on the planet. We will focus on the minds of the people we want to lead. In physics, an ordinary vector points from a place in space to a target which is in another place in space. That target could be higher or lower and to the left or right or in front or behind from wherever the arrow begins. These are three dimensions of the vector in space. A mathematical vector's intensity is determined by how far apart the beginning of the arrow and the tip of the arrow are, how long the vector is. There is actually a fourth dimension too to a vector. The fourth dimension is time. A mathematical vector's intensity and dimensions can change over any increment of time. Our vectors of self can also change drastically over time. What we value, who we like, what we need, what we do, what we know, what people know about us, how we feel, everything changes over time. Generally, we will focus on three-dimensional vectors. However, it is possible to model a vector with complex dimensions of any number, which represent different facets of any vector. Now, unlike the positional dimensions of a vector in physics, which are up, down, left, right, forward, or backward, the dimensions of a vector of self are specific to the person and the interests the vector of self represents. The three basic dimensions of a vector of self are action, information, and emotion. This is intuitively obvious at kind of a granular level because every vector of self, interest or desire or need or relationship, there are actions we take or don't take specific to that interest. There is information we know or don't know about that interest and information we emit to others or don't emit about that interest. And then there are emotions we feel or don't feel and emotion we emit or don't emit relevant to that interest. Now you can imagine easily a more complex quasi-involuntary vector of self modeling, say, drug addiction, where the fifth dimension could be a factor describing the nature of the vector as involuntary or voluntary or mixed activity over time. The sixth dimension could be an addiction factor, perhaps a function of other vector dimensions like dosage level, frequency, etc., that maybe even quantifies a vampiric effect as a factor which draws intensity from all other vectors of voluntary activity like relationships, work activity, etc. The seventh dimension of a vector like that could be pain. The eighth could be cumulative steps or symptom stages of withdrawal. The ninth could be an age-based factor quantifying a severity degree applicable to certain other vector dimensions based on age or probability of recidivism or probability of incarceration. The dimensions could be mathematically interrelated as time increases or other vector dimensions intensify. The possibilities are endless. And the reason leadership vector theory models these vectors, these interests, as vectors is because there's a direction to them. And the reason that's really important is because when you get vectors that are misaligned, you're going to have inefficiency, you're going to have stress and anxiety, and it's going to cause discomfort. And we know this makes perfect sense on a very practical level because the same things happen when we're trying to choose between two mutually exclusive things that we might want. Like, do we want to date this person or that person? Are we going to buy a vehicle? Do we want the sports car, the SUV, or the van? Do we want the black one with the gray interior or the red one with the tan interior? The tension and anxiety and confusion we feel when we make these choices radiate from the deviation between the vector directions of the choices that we face. Like when we're faced with an ethical dilemma. Do we do what we should do or do we do what we want to do? Do we live for now or do we look at the long game? Immediate gratification versus delayed gratification. We experience these kinds of vectors and these vector conflicts and misalignments our whole lives. They are merely diverging vectors. And the choices that we make reflect our identity as who we are. And that's why you can be certain that leadership vector theory and the physics of leadership is perhaps the closest, most comprehensive modeling of human behavior, because our choices are our vectors and our vectors are identity, which can change over time. However, our identity is reflected in the choices that we make. In other words, what we do is much more indicative of who we are than what we say, because actions speak louder than words. And in the leadership context, the greater the degree of the misalignment between a leadership vector from a leader and a vector of self from someone that leader wants to lead is going to be mathematically inefficient and otherwise characterized in language as bad leadership. It's leadership that will cause anxiety and distress and discomfort and inefficiency because of the misalignment between the leader's leadership vector and the employee's vectors of self. And one of the big reasons that vector modeling is so critical and the most appropriate way to model leadership and human interaction is that vectors aggregate. They automatically aggregate. The same way if somebody comes up to you and says something really horrible and really insulting, for the most part, people react. They hear something and they have a reaction. And of course, people can overcome their reactions with reason and discipline and things like that. Just like anything else, when you experience something, you react to it, just like vectors do. So the last thing we're going to discuss on vector leadership theory right now is going to be vector aggregation. And so we're going to do an example, and it's just from physics. We're going to think about a home run in baseball. So one of the main properties of vectors in applied physics is that when they interact, they stack end to end and merge into a resultant vector, which becomes the new vector. So let's illustrate this aggregation of vectors in physics with the vector mechanics we can model when a baseball player hits a home run during a game. Imagine a baseball is pitched from the mound towards the batter. We'll call the pitch the baseball vector. We'll call the batter's swing the bat vector. And when the bat and baseball make contact, the baseball vector absorbs and aggregates the dimensions of the bat vector, taking off towards the outfield like a rocket. This is the resultant baseball vector with an increased intensity, which becomes the new baseball vector, because that is the identity of the baseball at that point in time after contact with the bat. The bat vector absorbs and kind of aggregates the baseball vector, which vibrates the bat and slows down the swing. But then this resultant bat vector with a decreased intensity becomes the new bat vector. Now consider how the dimensions of the baseball vector change over time. From the perspective of the batter, as the baseball approached him over time, the dimensions of the baseball vector were coming towards him, maybe a minor variable movement over time to the left and right during the time it took for the pitch to reach the plate. Perhaps the pitch was a curveball, and the height of the pitch decreased over time as gravity tugged down on the ball between the time the pitch was released and the batter made contact. But after contact, the dimensions of the result baseball vector, which instantly becomes the new baseball vector, became away from the batter, deep into left field, and way up into the upper deck. The baseball had an original vector, then there was a reaction vector, the vector of the bat, and then when we add them together, the original vector plus the reaction vector created a combined resultant vector, which was the new vector of the baseball, which was a home run. Now in this episode, that's as far as we're going to go into vector theory. But in the next few episodes, what we're going to do is we're going to take a look at some of the prevailing leadership theory. We're going to unpack it and dissect it rationally according to the physics of leadership, and we're just going to see if it makes sense. Some of it will, but a lot of it won't. But before we do that, I want to talk about some of the just immediate fallacies that you'll see when you look out there in the leadership industry. And the first thing is organizational performance, the symbiotic intersection of the domain of leadership and the domain of management. Leadership domain and the management domain intersects and interact like force and matter interact in the physical universe. But there's prevailing confusion in the field of leadership, and that requires this clarification. We manage things, processes, and resources. We lead only people. Leadership is not organizational performance, and organizational performance is not leadership. And anyone tells you any different is selling you something. Processes and resources are inanimate and will likely remain so, perhaps until artificial intelligence is achieved, and are therefore immune to inspiration by the presence of effective leadership. People, on the other hand, are not immune to effective leadership. Leader effectiveness is not synonymous with good organizational performance necessarily, and neither is leader effectiveness a prerequisite of good organizational performance. Nor is it necessarily the cause of poor organizational performance. It's also intuitively obvious that organizations in fields of industry whose performance metrics and viability rely on environmental factors unaffected by leadership, like the weather, interest rates, recessions, or other macroeconomic market conditions, can perform very poorly and fail, notwithstanding the presence of highly effective leadership. And it also works in reverse. The worst leader in the world can have a very high-performing organization for the exact same reason, if the weather, interest rates, and market conditions dictate organizational performance in that organization. So now let's unpack the difference between management and leadership. Now consider a factory worker, now unemployed because the CEO, the quintessential leader-manager, chooses is to outsource domestic production to cut supply chain costs, thereby achieving a 25% increase in profitability. Is the CEO exercising effective leadership? Because the second law of the leadership physics tells us that it depends on which individuals we ask. Domestic factory workers, the foreign workers, the shareholders, and the employees not fired as part of the outsourcing will all give different answers about the CEO's leadership effectiveness based on their own vectors of self. Is the CEO a good manager achieving successful organizational performance? That answer lies completely within the domain of management and depends entirely on whether management's metrics for success are profitability or the happiness of the domestic workforce. In this case, the negative leadership impact on the unemployed domestic factory worker becomes irrelevant to organizational performance if profitability is the primary metric by which management chooses to measure its own organizational performance. The choice of the performance metric itself is yet another constraining management choice. Put another way, the management decision to outsource production is a structural change in the organization which nullifies the significance of the CEO's negative leadership impact on the now unemployed domestic factory worker if management's primary performance metric is profitability. Put another way, if management's primary values are profitability. So now let's just put a vector theory bow on it. So if the CEO's vector is to change the organization and outsource production, that same vector will cause a negative leadership reaction in the mind of the domestic factory worker, but at the same time cause a positive vector in the direction of the company vis-a-vis the company values. So because the same action can have a negative leadership action but a positive management impact, that just proves that the aspects of the domain of management and the domain of leadership coexist quasi-independently, because something that's good for one could be bad for the other. So therefore, the physics of leadership tells us that any leadership model advancing the idea that a positive leadership impact necessarily optimizes organizational performance, that is neither sound leadership nor sound organizational performance theory. On the other hand, it's universally accepted that effective leadership can enhance the performance contribution of an organization's human resources, but leadership is not the only performance enhancer vis-a-vis human resources. Within the domain of management are effective organizational structuring, good hiring decisions, and effective changes in operations. All of these potential management vectors also emit dimensional information which can have a powerful influence on the performance value contribution of an organization's human resources vis-a-vis organizational leadership. The bottom line is there's good and bad leadership and good and bad organizational performance, but they are not the same. Next, we're going to talk about the fallacy of leadership research and percentages. Lies, damn lies, and statistics, as Mark Twain said. Imagine a management effectiveness survey is completed by 10 workers, supervised by the same manager. If the research report indicates 90% of supervised employees rated the supervisor positive in all categories, we might conclude that the supervisor was a fantastic leader. However, if the manager was a male misogynist racist who supervised 9 male employees of his own ethnicity, this objectively horrible manager might enjoy glowing reviews from 9 out of 10 of his employees and one abysmal review from the one employee he marginalizes and mistreats and still achieve a 90% positive evaluation. So 90% is generally thought of as good, but not always. One time I heard a statistic that 70% of all obese children have parents who try to control their portions at mealtime. Someone might rationally conclude that if 70% of parents who try to control their child's food portions at mealtime have obese kids, then a parent shouldn't try to control their children's portions at mealtimes, or their children will have a 70% chance of obesity, which is wrong. Logically, it's probably the opposite. We can logically infer that 100% of parents who try to control their children's portions at mealtime did so and started doing so because 100% of them were parenting obese children. So the 70% statistic reveals a 30% chance success rate, that 30% of all parents who exercise portion control over their children's meals at mealtimes successfully eliminate their children's obesity. Nothing is a database study unless the data is there and the collection method and scientific research method is revealed. It's not data-based unless they can show you the math. And even when it is, just like the 70% obesity rate in children with concerned parents, in too many scenarios, it's just as likely that the data means the opposite of what the author tells you it does. The physics of leadership tells us we should be skeptical of leadership research, percentages, and other statistics. Conclusions through empirical observation must be tightly controlled to isolate variables that create false negatives and false positives. Garbage in, garbage out. Never take percentages at face value. Always make them show you the math. And the last leadership theory fallacy that I want to explore today is the uncertainty principle. Now, I talked about this back in Critical Thinking Part 2, the quantum physics of inductive reasoning. And one of the manifestations of the uncertainty principle is the phenomenon that measuring a system changes the system, thereby producing some degree of variation between the actual system metric in real time and the recorded measurement. This variation results in some degree of unreliability in the data, which causes a potential for error in conclusions derived from variation in that measured data. So for example, at children roughhousing in their room with the door closed, the parent hearing the ruckus opens the door and pokes their head into the room to see what's going on, thereby measuring the system. But the children hear the door open, stop what they're doing, and look up at the parent. Because the children stopped roughhousing when the parent opened the parent just changed the system by trying to measure it. And therefore, the measurement, the reading that the parent got looking into the room, was inaccurate. Also, consider the act of measuring a tire pressure in a tire with a gauge. After the reading is taken, the gauge is pulled away from the tire, and a pssst can be heard as a small amount of air is released. The process of measuring the pressure in the tire, some air pressure was released, and therefore the act of measuring the tire actually changes the pressure in the tire after it's measured. And this is one of the reasons we need to beware of database conclusions in leadership surveys, because perhaps the greatest uncertainty principle variation can be achieved by asking someone about themselves. We know this is true because all the physics of leadership bear on the individual's reaction vector to a question. Their reception of information is heavily influenced under the second law of leadership physics, and their dimension action will be influenced by their interests under the first law of leadership physics. And so there's a considerable, perhaps unconscious pressure under the third law of leadership physics for them to answer in a way that makes them feel good about themselves. Consider people in a discussion about bad leadership. If you've ever talked about toxic leadership with a group of people before, you probably know that bad leaders, toxic leaders participating in those discussions always think the discussion is about people other than them. And the uncertainty principle is just as true in the practice of leadership and management. Imagine a leader or manager wants to assess an employee's productivity even with the purpose of preparing a performance award for the employee. If an employee notices and looks up at a leader looking over their shoulder attempting to measure that employee's productivity, the leader just changed the employee's productivity. If the employee notices the supervisor and they've been at least somewhat distracted or delayed, or maybe the employee works a little bit harder than normal to make a good impression, or maybe the employee might become nervous about what the leader might intend or think, and in response become much more careful and deliberate and slowed down. In leadership vector theory, the leader's move could be modeled as a leadership vector intended to assess the worker productivity that emitted a dimension of information which triggered an inefficient reaction vector which may or may not have been aligned with the leader's intent. The uncertainty principle is real. Measuring the system changes the system. And so it's important when we do it in the context of leadership to try to take those measurements in a way calculated to cause as little system variation as possible. So when you look back on this episode and you remember that there is an imposed order, immutable natural laws of leadership necessary to create the predictable, repeatable, and causal linkage between effective leadership action and an effective leadership result, then you will know that you have been inside my mind. And if effective leaders and effective leadership exists anywhere, then the physics of leadership must exist everywhere. And that is a fact. And the next time you hear someone confuse and conflate organizational performance and leadership excellence, then you will know that I am inside your mind too.